flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Brother D, how are you, man?
I am doing freaking great. It's so strange to be... Well, I told you I'm getting involved with some things that I really can't formally announce. Let's just say I'm going much more heavily in film, and it's way more than a sequel to Strangeland, okay?
Oh, great.
So,
great,
and I'm building a family compound in North Carolina. It's just about finished. I'm bringing my whole family together into one, well, it's a compound, you know, and my kids and my grandkids. And so it's pretty exciting times, you know?
Dude, I have friends. So, you know, Jesse and I have been friends a long time. His guitar player and drummer, the Whirlies, they live on a compound in the Carolinas. And I asked him time, I go, what are you guys doing out there? And he goes, but, and it was just that great Chris Whirly goes, man, why would you want to live near others? And I went, dude, I guess I understand it. Like, you know, you do. You bring your family close. You have your own area. You all take care of each other. I think it is the right way to do it. I really do think it's the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's the world's changing, so we were all out in California, and it's like, you know, I'm established, so my wife and I were, you know, fine. We were actually loving it out there, living right by the beach and all that stuff. But you know, my kids, grown, 30s, 40s, yeah. You know, they were, you know, it's like it's a tough place to get ahead.
Yeah,
out there in LA, at price of everything, and it's, you know, it's really. I love Los Angeles. It's going to hell in a handcart, unfortunately. And so it just came sort of it was like a family meeting, like, let's go someplace where everybody has a chance and we'll be closer together and we get away from some of the craziness. And it's the first time in my life. I've always lived in like a cultural center, whether it was New York,
right.
LA, Vegas. First time I've been someplace where if there was a nuclear war, we wouldn't get hit. I mean, I lived with the idea that I was in like range of New York City, in range of downtown Los Angeles, in range of wherever, you know, the world war would happen. Not that I'm predicting that, but just, yeah, I was crazy. I said, I've always, my whole life, I'm old enough to remember when they used to make us have atomic bomb drills where we'd curl up in a ball under our desk.
I know, which was
so
the
they
worst.
Know where the bodies were.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, dude, I remember all of it, D, and it makes sense. Listen, you've always been family-oriented. I think people would be, if they're not real fans, if they just knew you from just pop culture, I think they'd be surprised to understand how long you and your wife have been together, how long and how much family means to you, that you're not...
Dude, in April, it's going to be 49 years since she made the biggest mistake of her life and borrowed her cousin's fake proof to go see the girl group. She's actually. I mean, I tell you, my wife's working on her. Suzette is working on her memoirs, and she. When I tell you that her life, I'm an asterisk. I'm like, oh yeah, she married a guy who became pretty famous. Like that's like, and then everything else with the mafia and the murders and the drug addiction, and not hers, but. And the divorce and she's been through so much stuff, and it's why people wanted to write. Like, how did you survive things that would cripple the average person? Alcoholic parents, that would cripple some people.
Sure,
you know, a relative being murdered, that destroys someone's life entirely. How do you pick up suicide? You know, people's drug addiction, being committed to mental institutions, family members. How do you live through this and still be smiling? You know, and not that it didn't affect her, but it certainly, she's trying to share that, you know. But yeah, but in the book, you know, she talks about going in to see Twisted Sister. We were just starting out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was about 10 people in the club, and she walked right to the front of the stage, waiting to see the girls come out. And then I walked out in Daisy Duke stockings, thigh-high leather boots, and a T-shirt that said, I'm Dee Blow Me. And she said, that's not a girl.
Dude, if I remember right from Shut Up and Give Me the Mic, was she started to put just a little bit of pink on the lips, like just make it pop a little bit. And then it just got a little darker and a little darker and a little darker. And she really did help shape the look of Twisted Sister, though.
Oh yeah, she was always pushing me to be more adventurous, and I was like, you know, I'm going to use some words, people here. These were the words we used in the 70s. I'm sorry, we were stupid, but she'd say, you know, you should try putting a little lipstick on it. I'm not a faggot, you know. She goes, that's some clear gloss, clear gloss. Like, all right, I'll put some clear gloss. So she would literally just slowly bring me down the path to like bright red lips, and then. Same with the nail polish. How about some nail polish? I'm not a fig. Yeah. Black. Wear some black. Black became purple, became blue, became red, became pink. And I had pink fingernails for like 15 years. So it was like all that stuff was just her, you know, and I would sort of look at her and go, okay, I'm not gay, so let's go for it. You know, and she'd make me costumes. I remember Eddie would say, I mean, she made me some, in your early days, there's pictures out there. She made me some things. And Eddie go, are you embarrassed to go out wearing that? And I said, hey, she made it. I'm wearing it, you know. And I would just go out in these shorty sequin tops and, you know, and these, oh, my God. I found out, I ran into some girls on the girls, women, who used to come see us in the bars. And back in those days, I used to wear a lot of pastels. Right. She said maybe pastel pink and pastel yellow, pastel of pink, you know, blue. And they said, and we were talking, they said, did you know we could see your penis through your clothes when you started sweating? I was like, what? She goes, yeah. She goes, it's like a wet T-shirt contest. Says when you start sweating, the lights will hit you, and we can just see your Johnson.
That's
and
great.
I went home to Suzette. I said, Suzette, people can see my Johnson. Once. And she goes, yeah, you didn't know that. She was like, she thought I was hopefully aware that I was crackly nude on stage every night.
It was, but that was Twisted Sister, right? It was. You guys were never. You ever part of the Poison? And like, you know, you talk about like, you know, a couple of guys in a band could pull, I think, girls, but the overall look was never supposed to be like beautiful, like, you know, like Poison, where you looked at that album cover and you went, are those girls? They might really be girls. They were kind of
There was a few catchphrases used along the way. One of them was Cinderella's ugly sisters. I remember that was one of them.
But you guys would come out, and that was the point of it all, right? Like the most outrageous, the most over the top, the biggest, the strongest, the loudest, the furthest. That was Twisted Sister. That's what we all became fans for, and that's how you guys built the biggest following for an unsigned band, maybe in the history of that entire time in rock and roll, man. That entire decade, maybe 25 years. You guys, what was the biggest show before your record deal in the United States? You guys had that giant show. Was it how many?
Yeah, we decided there was a weekly concert series going on at a local amusement park, and they were having like local bands play, and they were doing 300 to 800 people, you know, on a Wednesday night during the summer, you know, and they were having a good turnout, and they booked Twisted. 23,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
With Kiss playing the Garden to half a house. Thank God they took off the pressure, because I remember going back 25 years later and saying, what about doing that again? Let's 25 years later, let's bring Twisted back. Let's do it again. And the owner said, No thanks, D. We're still cleaning up.
But imagine 23,000 people. You don't have an official record deal yet. You're putting out your own singles. You're selling out rooms. You're doing, you know, all of these shows. And there was a genuine prejudice. And I think in some of the record label guys were just dicks. And they had just had it in. They couldn't even see past their own prejudice to take the money, right? Like there were guys.
Yeah, there was this disdain for the suburbs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's really, you know, it's particularly heavy metal's always been a very suburban and rural kind of music. It's a kind of in your car music, cruising around music. Yeah. And the cities, the urban centers, they really don't get that. Go ahead, getting in the car. Back then it was putting an 8-track or a cassette, you know, but and cruising around, listening to music with your friends. That's not something. And this is where all the record companies were. They were in the epicenters like New York, London, L.A. as well. But really the reason L.A. broke out is because L.A. is a suburban city. So people, you have to drive everywhere in L.A. so people
That's
can
right.
connect with that. Connect with it. So I'm not surprised that it broke out there. But we just had this impossible to get these you know, guys in the big towers and record companies to cross a bridge and drive for an hour to come out to Long Island where, you know, there's a population density. These clubs were packed. I'm not making stuff up. It was 1,000, 2,000, sometimes there 4,000 people a night to see Twisted Sister. They'd rather go down to CBGB's where there were 37 people and a bum and yeah. and sign a band that was playing there. So all these CBGB's bands are getting signed hand over fist and we're packing them in. This is the 70s. And we can't get arrested, you know?
Yeah, and it finally started to break. And for me, they had to follow the what was happening in England. You guys were going over in Europe like gangbusters. Lemmy and you became friends. It was, you guys were doing an unbelievable amount of business there, man, because they got it. They understood it. In Europe, England has always been this great hotbed of metal. Like, it still is. Like, I just got back.
You know, and of rock in general. We had to leave the States after being rejected by every label five times. Five times, and we went to England, got an indie deal, but other bands have done it before us. Joan Jett broke out there, Jimi Hendrix broke out there, the Stray Cats. So not just metal bands.
Right.
It's been a place to go where you could get some attention, and it would actually make its mark. And so we got signed to Atlantic Records there against the will of the president of Atlantic Records in America.
Right.
He said to the head of Atlantic in Europe, "It's on your head." He said, "You're signed." He had rejected us five times. He had rejected us for other boutique labels like Atco. He had told him, "No, you can't sign them." And when Phil Carson, that's his name, we're still friends, he's my manager now. When he said he's signing Twisted Sister, the guy said, "They suck."
God.
And Phil, fortunately, he said, "Listen, I signed ABBA, Yes, Foreigner, AC/DC, he goes, "I've had over 300 million sales and records that are responsible for my signings." He goes, "And I say, this is going to be big." And Doug Morris, his name was, said, "Phil, it's on your head."
What did you do? What did you? I always want to ask you, what did you do? Sorry to interrupt you, but I feel like he was, that's personal. Like, he was pissed off at you. Like, that guy had some hard on for you that I'm like, what happened that he decided, against all obvious signs, I'm not going to do this?
Well, you know, I mean, Phil Carson was a bass player. He played with Dusty Springfield, and the Beatles opened for Dusty. I mean, Phil started as a bass player, as a session bass player. That's how he met Jimmy and John Paul Jones doing sessions. And then because he worked with Zeppelin since day one. So he was a musician. He got it. Doug Morris was a lawyer. So, and there's too many lawyers. There's too many bean counters who were in control of creativity and the arts. It's just amazing. I mean, you would sit there and have these people come down to hear, you know, your mixes, and have to have a lawyer saying, "You know, I think the bass is a little loud." Seriously, dude? Seriously? And based on what? Based on law school you went to? But you have to sit there and bite your tongue and go, "Yeah, man, okay, we'll see if we can bring that down a little in the mix." Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the difference when you get someone like Phil Carson who, you know, again, came from a musical background and was a gut guy. So, I mean, he signed ABBA. They won Eurovision, I believe. They won Eurovision. He signed them. AC/DC, he signed. Some girl came from Australia with one of those little briefcases. They're old, man, people. These little briefcases, you open up, it'll be a little movie screen and a projector. And you can show a 16-millimeter film. And at like 2 in the morning, he's hanging out with this girl and he watched It's a Long Way to the Top in a bar in Australia. AC/DC, he said, I'll sign him.
That's crazy.
Said, you'll sign him? He says, call him up. And it was like, it woke Angus up and said, Atlantic Records wants to sign you guys. You know, I mean, but this is, you know, we've got an artist looking for art. I mean, that makes sense to me. Not lawyers making the big decision going, yeah, they suck.
Well, there's, I don't think you've ever been better. I mean this than when you're in an adversarial position, D. And I mean that because I think when someone tells you no, when someone tells you you're not good enough, someone tells you they're not okay with you. I think that's when you find an extra gear and it always comes through.
Sadly, it's true. I wish it had to be a Suzette said, your show is always best when you're pissed off. Right. And I'll see her when I'll come into a place and to a show and something's not right or, you know, I'm in a bad mood. She goes, she says to everybody, get ready for a great show. He's really, when he's pissed off, he's at his best. I go, you know, it sucks to have to be like that because I'm still like that, building this new business that I'm building. I tell you, it's film related. I'm getting it's some big things happening, but it's still like this uphill battle. I feel like I'm still just fighting this fight. I go, really? Still? Does it ever like lessen up and come easier? But you know, there's all those sayings. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Know
what? I wouldn't mind if it was easy once. You know? Once.
Yeah, dude, I get it. But I've watched you for too long. Like everything, the hard way is just it is what fires you up. It is what it's what drives you, man. By the way, if you're just joining the show, D. Snyder's with us. He's going to be in Kansas City. That's the point. February 1st, the KC Convention Center, Bartle Hall, legendary World of Wheels. Is happening, the 65th annual World of Wheels. You'll be able to hang with D, see D, get anything signed by D from 2 to 5, February 1st. That's a Saturday. And, man, I'm glad you're doing those because, man, this is the only time when I was a kid, you couldn't get near the band, right? Like, there weren't, unless you were in the record industry or radio industry, there was no meet and greet. All these people to get a chance to say hey, to take a picture, to shake a hand, to get something signed, like, you're a big part of a lot of people's lives, D.
I love doing the World of Wheels events. It's just with Autorama, you know, and I've done a bunch of them because it is, I do a lot of conventions too. And the conventions, people, if you've gone to conventions, you know, you got to buy or pay, you know, and that's like the convention thing. The convention's paying the artists to be there.
Yeah.
So this is how they get the money back. So, I mean, that's everybody understands that's the convention way. But World of Wheels, there's no charge. I love that. The picture is a picture for free. You can take a picture of me or whatever. It's free. And I love that. So everybody, I'm there for a few hours and people line up. I want to warn people. And Johnny knows this. My first ever convention was with Paul Stanley. Well, his name is Paul too. Paul Freely. Ace Freely. And with Peter Chris, okay? The three of us sitting at a table. And they're great guys. We get along great, whatever. But they have a really offstandish way with their fans. And people were lining up, and they wouldn't look the people in the eye. They wouldn't shake their hands. If someone broke out a camera, the security ripped the camera out of their hands. They wouldn't sign anything extra. It was my first signing, and I was sitting at the table with them, and I'm going, I just didn't get it. I don't understand. These people are waiting online to meet you, and you won't even look them in the eye. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to be that guy. And I've never been that guy. No. I stand up the entire time. I shake every hand. Someone said, don't you worry about it. Want to use some sanitizer? I go, this is a positive exchange here. I'm not going to get sick from shaking somebody's hand with someone who's a fan, and I'm shaking her hand. That's but whatever. Right. I take pictures. I talk to people. I take a minute. The reason I'm telling you that, people, is you have to sort of sign up to get a space in the line to make sure you get all. I'm only there 3 hours, and I tend to spend a few minutes with people. So make sure when you get there, you register to get up there. They tell you when to come. You don't have to wait the whole time. It's kind of like the express pass. They say, next group, come on up, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I really enjoyed doing it. It's a great chance to meet people, and there's no charge, which I love that World of Wheels does that. Nobody has to pay anything for this.
No, and I'll tell you, the other thing is, and I love this about you, because you've always been very careful, you're still D. Snyder. Like, I look at you, D, and I go, that's D. That's D from Twisted Sister. It's you know, sometimes, you know what I'm talking about. You'll see a musician from your childhood, and you go, somewhere in there, I think I see them. But you,
oh my God,
you look just like D to me. You're like D Snyder, man.
Oh, it's worse for me because these guys, people who I've knew from the 80s, they come up and say, D, and I'm like, oh crap, who is this? They've got black hair, doesn't mean they used to have black hair. They've got a beard,
like a
Fu Manchu kind of thing. They're all doing it. And they all kind of look like Frankie Benali, you know, when he's like,
that's it.
And everybody, and I'm like, and I'm sitting there, hey, good to see you. And I'm trying to quickly figure out, who am I talking to?
Right.
I actually, oh my God, I'm going to say this on the air, but that's, I can never shut my mouth. That's my problem. I threw Don Dokken off stage.
Oh, no.
Because he came, we were doing a show together, and he came out in the middle of one of my songs to join me. And I just saw this bear of a man wearing like a fur coat with a cowboy hat on and like a big beard. And I go, dude, I literally shoved him off the stage. And then Danny, my manager, goes, it's Don Dokken. I'm like, Don, that's who, sorry, I'm wearing my sunglasses. Get out of here. I mean, he's like, hey, what are you doing? Like, you know, but. Hey, people are changing. Yeah, unfortunately, I still look like me.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
But I'll tell you, also, there's a thing, man. When you walk up on that stage, D, you become another person. It's you, but that's your stage. Those are your square foot. That's your square footage from front to back, side to side. And I've watched this over all the years. Certain lead singers, man, when they turn, when they become, man, it's a different world up there, man. It's a different brain. It's a different space.
I stopped, you know, touring and recording, but I've been doing these, I call them all-star shows, Kings of Chaos. I'm on the list with those guys. Brett Michaels been going around doing Party Gras, and he brings me along. And now Lita's taking me out. I'm going out with Sebastian. There's, you know, I go around and I do these gigs, and they always bring me out last. My wife says, because that's because you're the closer.
That's right.
I said, the closer? She goes, yeah, you close the show. Because after you go up there, I remember I was with Chevy Metal, and I was playing with Chevy Metal, and they were still doing their set. But after they brought me out, they said, yeah, we're just going to end it right there.
Yeah, because that's as good as it's going to get, man. Yeah, that's it.
They said, yeah, that we're just going to end it. Good night. You know, like, what do you do after D does I Want to Rock or Highway to Hell with the, and the place goes crazy? So, yeah, you know, it's fun because I just do a few songs. I go out there with friends, have a great time, and so I've got a whole bunch of those different things booked this coming year, and more coming, so keep your ears open for those.
Oh, man, and I will tell you, what a great time to get your book signed. Shut up and give me the mic. He's not going to take it. Frats. Get all the stuff for you know, World of Wheels. You can bring it in. You can get it signed. This, nobody's going to freak out on you. You can get it, take a picture. You can shake a hand. You actually get a chance to get that stuff. Man, go back. I was so excited, man. I was in Paris for just a moment, and I was looking at record stores. And I went to this kick-ass, this fantastic old record store called High Voltage, and it had one of the original, Come Out and Play records that you could actually lift open the middle, and it was the sewer lid where you were coming out. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen one of these. I mean, the guy's looking at me. I'm just freaking out.
Yeah, those were the spare no expense days.
Yeah.
Like, you want what I wanted, because I used to love the Alice Cooper albums. It turned into a desk. It was a wallet.
Oh, panties.
There was a billion-dollar baby, you know, a bill in there. And I used to love panties and the wood muscle and the cardboard muscle love box. So I loved, it was so much fun to get those kind of packages. So I wanted to come out to play to be like that. But yeah. Oh, by the way, I figure I've got four, but you name three. I've got a fourth book out, right? That I said, oh, damn, when did I become an author? There's a children's book. For it's called We're Not Going to Take It. It's about bratty kids who won't eat their vegetables or take a nap, and they use We're Not Going to Take It lyrics for a children's book. Good God! And actually, this year we're going to be reissuing the Teenage Survival Guide, which came out back in the 80s.
I remember.
To much acclaim, but has been out of print, and people have been demanding it. So I'm reissuing that. And it, what's interesting about that one is I took this of updating it. Here I wrote a book like 40 years ago about growing up and all that. Well, now I'm 40 years later, and I'm inserted a view from the other side. Like, did these things I was advising people to do, did they hold true? This is what I thought life would be. Was it? You know, and so it was a great opportunity to observe, you know, how I thought things would be back in the 80s and what's the truth of them in the 2020s. You know, so anyway, that's going to be reissued this year.
Well, dude, you've always been a great voice. And if you're just joining the show, Dee Snider's with us. Dude, when I was a kid, lyrically, I knew we were connected somehow because, you know, being an outsider kid, not exceptionally smart or great at sports, and I dabbled in drugs, but not a lot of drugs. And so, you know, just kind of an outside kid. Like, you had one good friend at a time, and you'd go over records, and you were just the outside kid. We weren't rich, but we weren't super poor. And so you never had it easy. From the time you were growing up to how Twisted Sister made it to the way you've lived your life, you have been you're probably the most fiercely loyal human I've ever met. In the sense, like, when you married Suzette, you're like, this is forever. You didn't do drugs. You were like, when I make this band, well, you know, I'm going to make this band happen. You willed it to happen. When there was a question about whether or not you could write a song between you and J.J. French, you were like, oh, well, then allow me to show you this. And you realized, I have to learn to do this. Man, that's sheer willpower.
It is willpower. I was telling somebody something in high school. They made us take aptitude tests to see what we were meant to do. Mine said farmer. I said farmer. I was farmer. How did I become a farmer? What did I say? That farmer. I'm not going to be a farmer. Gee, nothing is anything wrong with farming, people.
Right.
Because I'm not
anti-farming
by any means. But, you know, but same. I wanted to be a rock star since I was 8. Farmer? Like, why would you? You didn't ask me the right questions.
Yeah. Well, that's it, man. My high school guidance counselor, true story, took me in and he said, Caprifoli, you're either going to be dead or in jail. And I swear to God. I was
which reminds me of a song by Michael Monroe, Death, Jail, or Rock and Roll.
That's exactly it. Oh, dude. By the way, what a brilliant way I could go into that, how much I love Mike Monroe and Hanoi. But you,
that's a great song.
Oh, dude, that whole album, man. Shakedown on that record? God damn. It's just...
That was a great... So now we're going down there. The wreck people going, what? Michael Monroe? I mean, some people are getting it. Others aren't. But hey, you know what? I'm really glad. So people... Listeners, you know, you probably know this because Johnny's been on so freaking long now. I mean, it's when I think about it, I go, oh damn, you know, And when I joined, I was with Widowmaker,
that's right.
Came to Kansas City, and I did the show for the first time. But I realized that was early on in you being on the air.
What year 96, was that for you? 97?
Yeah,
and it was, Widowmaker came in, and you guys came in and played Roadhouse Rubies up north. I remember the show like it was yesterday, man.
Yeah, and but I was really good friends with Howard Stern, and really good. And I used to do a show all the time in New York and whatever. And Johnny was doing a show. Who was your host back then?
Murphy.
She was great.
So it would have been 94, 95, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Or
yeah,
later
yeah.
Than that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was great. And, and I said, damn, this is the best show, morning show, and I've said this to you before, that I've ever been outside of Howard. I said, this guy can hold his own. And, you know, and you proved it, of course, when Howard tried to come to town. Big mistake. Can't beat Johnny Dare in Kansas City. No, sir. And, but you know what? And but more than anything, we became friends at that point. And I always regarded you as a friend. So when I heard I was coming to Kansas City, I reached out to you. I told you, right? I said, let's grab a bite, blah, blah, blah. Great opportunity to catch up because, you know, honestly, I've got a friendship with you. And you talk about a loyal guy, people. You know this about Johnny, okay? I mean, he shows up at my book signings and I do my quick Q&A and he's there and he's always been there supporting me and cheering me on. So, because in this post-Twisted Sister life, you know, it's always been, it's always something new going on.
Ah, dude, I can't wait. It's going to be a great day. Saturday, February 1st, World of Wheels from 2 to 5. It's a Saturday, man, so clear your day. Make sure that you get there early. Make sure you get your place in line. Dee Snider's rolling into Kansas City. And, man, listen, anytime. I literally will do 2 hours with you because you're one of those guys that will start talking about music, about life, about how to live, about how we're supposed to be, about the world that we're looking at. And there's no subject that isn't interesting with you, Dee, every single time, man. And I appreciate you, brother.
Well, man, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for calling, Jake. Thanks for picking up the phone, Jake. I'm sure, I don't know who's the boss, but Jake always calls and says, Dee, can we get you on? And I'm so glad I'm living on the East Coast again. So it's not like,
right.
It's not like inhuman for me to get a call to the show because I was in LA all these years.
Oof. I know. All right. Listen, I love you, brother. You are the legendary Dee Snider. I love you, man.
Take care, everybody. See you soon. See you next week.
See you next week. Stay there, man.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.